Welcome to a Monday episode of the Soccer Central Podcast. I'm John Molinaro, chief soccer writer for Sportsnet.ca, with a special edition of the show. As you all know, in past editions, we take time out to speak to journalists from around the world who have a particular area of expertise, and that's the case again today. Paddy Agnew is a Rome-based writer for the Irish Times, who covers the Vatican and Italian politics, two interesting subjects, to say the least. But Paddy is also one of the leading English-language journalists in the world covering Serie A and Italian football, and he also serves as World Soccer Magazine's Italian correspondent for close to 30 years now. He is also the author of Forza Italia, The Fall and Rise of Italian Football, which is a wonderful book that came out in 2006, detailing not only Italian soccer, but it's also a personal tale of his time spent in Italy. The book is available on Amazon.com, and I highly recommend picking it up, as it's a funny and very engaging read at times. Paddy has been kind enough to take time out of his busy schedule to talk to Soccer Central, and joins us now on the phone from Rome. Mr. Agnew, how are you, sir?
Good evening, John. Or good afternoon, I should say. It's afternoon with you people.
That's right. Well, I guess the place to start would be with last Friday's draw for the World Cup. The Azzurri were selected into a group with Uruguay, Costa Rica, and England. I'm curious, what's been the general reaction to the group in Italy?
Well, the general reaction is it's a pretty tough group. It's maybe not the toughest group. Maybe Germany got a tougher group, or Spain, Holland's a tougher group, but certainly everybody thinks it's a very, very tough group. But, you know, John, I tell you, my reaction to it, or rather Cesare Prandelli's reaction, the Italian coach, because I had a long chat with Prandelli on last Tuesday, just before he headed off to Brazil. And one of the things I said to him was, well, what are you looking for in the draw? And he said basically his biggest fear was that they'd get what the media calls an easy group. Because his theory, and a lot of Italians tend to agree with him, that if Italy found themselves, you know, in a group with, Iceland, Costa Rica, and Lithuania, they won't get through to the next round. If they find themselves in a group like this with Uruguay and England, they'll start playing football seriously right from the kickoff. Because, you know, if you you saw the draw for the 2010 World Cup, you imagine that there'd be no problems really for Italy getting into the second round, and of course they didn't. They were out in the first round.
Interesting. So he kind of thought that the harder the group, then the better it would be for Italy going, possibly advancing to the knockout round.
I think it's just a classic of the motivation factor. You know, as we all know, we've been saying this till we're ultra blue in the face. But I mean, motivation and your psychological approach in all professional sport is what matters. Italians have a particular problem in relation to getting up for games that they don't think are really very serious. So that's why they get into trouble with Slovenia at the World Cup. That's why they've had problems in the 2002 World Cup in the first round as well. Prandelli's view is very simple. You know, if we're in a group with some big names, I won't have any problems getting the lads up. I know they've got to do it right from day one, and they'll be thoroughly concentrated, and they'll be on the job.
Is there a sense in Italy that this Azzurri side stands a legitimate chance of winning the World Cup?
No, I would think most Italian fans, as well as Italian critics, will put this Italy team just below the very top. You know, if we think that sides like Argentina, Brazil, Spain are at the very top of the tree, in the next, and Germany, obviously, in the next group, you could put Italy. What everybody feels clearly, though, is that this side is a bit different from the Italian sides as we've known over the years, because one of the things that Prandelli said he'd do when he took over was, play the sort of football that the players wanted to play as well. And we're now in the funny situation where they're playing a lot of good football, but unlike most Italian national teams that you and me and all our listeners have seen, they're not absolutely rock solid in defence these days. And they play a lot of good football, but they give away goals they probably shouldn't give away. So, in that sense, Italian fans looking at it think, well, you know, with a defence that isn't quite as rock solid as it might be, maybe we're going to be in trouble in Brazil next summer.
Yeah, you mentioned Prandelli, and he's someone I wanted to talk to you about. I mean, what have you made of the job he's done since taking over from Marcello Lippi? Because when we think back to 2010 and how the team bowed out in disgrace, it was really a low point for the Azzurri. But, you know, since then he's managed to get them, you know, to the final of Euro 2012. And as you said, playing this, you know, fairly attractive and attacking brand of football. So I just wanted to get your general impression of how he's kind of been able to transform the team.
Well, I think I can't really say enough good things about Prandelli, frankly, because on and off the field, I think he's a fantastic coach. He's somebody off the field, is somebody who can think outside of football. He's no problems getting the side involved in all sorts of social issues in Italian society. You know, he takes the side to train on a football pitch down in Calabria on land that's been reclaimed or sequestered from mafia mobsters. He himself goes along and presents the prize of the gay footballers tournament. I mean, he's not your classic conservative manager off the pitch. And on the pitch, he's somebody who really believes in good football. And, you know, he tends to play only players with, what the Italians say, piedi buoni, you know, good feet, you know, guys who can actually knock it around. He's absolutely not a negative coach. So, you know, it's not for nothing. He you know, the key figure in his side is, you know, arguably one of the most skillful midfielders of the last decade in Andrea Pirlo. And that he likes nippy little fellas like Giuseppe Rossi up front. He's also got, of course, the magnificent Mario Balotelli up front too. But one of the things he's done that's very clear is that he said from the beginning that he'd be looking to extend the net in terms of bringing players into the side. He said he wanted to use more of what he called the new Italians. Well, the new Italians, for the time being, the biggest success story of the new Italians is clearly Mario Balotelli, who, is a black man, but a black man who's lived all his life in Italy. And, he's a fantastic symbol for racial integration in Italian football. It doesn't always work out, but it's certainly a very felicitous combination that Prandelli's. He's turned out that he's not only a black player, but an absolutely outstandingly brilliant black player, and arguably, when we go to Brazil next year, Balotelli's going to be the key Italian player.
We're talking to Paddy Agnew, longtime Rome correspondent for World Soccer Magazine. Looking ahead to this week's Champions League calendar, Juventus travels to Turkey to face Galatasaray in a bit of a do-or-die clash. Juventus needs only a draw to advance to the knockout stage, but they're going to be without Andrea Pirlo, who is out until the new year with a knee injury. How much of this is going to affect Juventus's performance in Turkey, do you think?
Well, obviously, any team misses Pirlo. Pirlo, even though he's 33, 34 now, and not getting any younger, he's still a fantastic player, Pirlo. And he's still a player, one of those players who's able to dictate the rhythm of the game, and one of those players to whom teammates can give the ball in almost any situation and know that he'll be able to hold on to it and do something with it. He's essentially be replaced by the Frenchman Pogba, who's been a huge success this season. And, with Pogba, Vidal and Marquinhos in midfield, Juventus are very, very well served. Juventus at the moment are in terrific form. They are by far and away the strongest side in Serie A this season. There's not much doubt about that. And so, if you want my opinion, I think they'll only need a draw, as you said, in Istanbul, and I think they'll get it. And they may well even win the game. I think they'll go through. And it's correct that they go through. They should have, they should have already be qualified. They now that let themselves down, and particularly their away draw against in Copenhagen when they should have won that game. But I think they'll go through, undeservedly so. But I wouldn't say the same, obviously, for the other two Italian sides, because Napoli face, obviously, as we know, a really difficult job. At home to Arsenal, needing to beat them, that is not going to be easy. Arsenal is currently on top of the Premiership and looking very strong. And Napoli, Napoli are a side that flattered to deceive in a lot of games. We had a perfect example last Saturday in their home game against Udinese. They should have won that game about 3-1, and they end up, you know, with a couple of defensive errors, lack of attention, and they end up with a 2-3 draw. And I'd be very worried with them. I think Arsenal will come out of that tonight, and that Napoli won't go through. As for Milan, their form in the Champions League, having gotten themselves into this position where they just need a draw against Ajax, it's in contrast with their pretty miserable form in Serie A, as everybody knows. I mean, if you look at the Italian league table, they're down in ninth position, and they haven't been playing well. And they haven't been playing well for a variety of reasons, and a lot of may well be that a lot of the reasons are to do with off the field turbulence at Milan, because the club has currently been shaken by the fact by a sort of power struggle at board level between the club's historic owner, the former Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi, the media tycoon, his daughter, who sits on the board. As such, she wants to have a much more active role on the board. She seems to want to take over the running of the club. And in so doing, she's made the long-time managing director of AC Milan, Adriano Galliani, a long-time partner and business associate of Silvio Berlusconi, and a man who's been the right-hand man for Berlusconi since Berlusconi bought the club back in 1986. And Galliani, obviously, you know, it's a bit of an earthquake to find somebody who's been running the club practically for the last 30 years to find himself threatened with the door. And I don't think that's helped the club at all, and it hasn't helped the position of Massimiliano Allegri, the club coach. He finds himself regularly under pressure. Not much aided by the fact that the owner, Mr. Berlusconi himself, has never really had a fantastically high opinion of Allegri, despite the fact that he won a title in his first season there, and he's kept Milan pretty competitive ever since.
You talked about the off the field machinations with Galliani and the changes in management. What about on the field? I mean, we're talking about a Rossoneri side who's sitting ninth in the table, 22 points back of leaders Juventus. I know all the stuff that's going off the field, but how do you account for their poor domestic campaign in terms of what they're producing on the field?
There are three or four factors to it. I mean, I still think the club hasn't got over the loss two seasons ago of Ibrahimovic and Thiago Silva, two of the strongest players in the world, and also at the same time you the decision to sell Pirlo to Juventus, which was a gift to Juventus, and there's no Pirlo figure in the Milan midfield, and there's no towering defensive figure like Thiago Silva was, nor is there a towering centre forward figure like Ibrahimovic. On top of that, El Shaarawy, who's the Egyptian origin Italian, another of Prandelli's new Italians, who was a fantastic player, he's had injury problems. Put together those combination of factors, and it's not entirely surprising that Allegri's had trouble getting the side together. He had the same trouble last season. He managed to get it together before the end of the season, and he says he will do so again. But his biggest problem to me at the moment seems to be defensive, and Milan seems to concede an awful lot of goals, and an awful lot of goals from set piece situations, which it's not the sort of thing you expect a top level club to do.
You mentioned Allegri before. Should he be concerned about losing his job?
Well, I think poor old Allegri's concerned about losing his job. Well, let me put it another way. If Allegri was to be concerned about losing his job, he'd be concerned about it. He'd have those concerns every day. He wakes up every day, shaves himself in the mirror. He basically, I think he's learned to live with that pressure. And the reality is that if, for example, as it looks at the moment, Milan were to finish outside the Champions League zone, in other words, in the first three now in Serie A, Well, then I think Milan under Barbara Berlusconi will be looking for a new coach at the end of the season, if not before.
Right. The Gelorossi, Roma, they remain undefeated after 15 yeah. games. For me, this is one of the best stories in Serie A. You know, they won their first 10 games in a row. And although they've hit a bit of a rough patch lately, they're only 3 points back of Juventus. What do you attribute their success this season to?
Well, again, a variety of things. In the initial period, old man Totti was playing out of his skin. He's been injured recently, and his injuries, coincidentally or not coincidentally, seemed to be at the same time the club started to draw matches instead of winning them. But I would have said, you know, that this is a club that has had a complete... revamp. You've got a new coach in Garcia, the Frenchman, a guy who coached at Lille before, who wasn't very well known to many football fans in Italy, and certainly not well known to the Roma fans, and who was greeted with a certain amount of scepticism. But he seemed to have won over the senior players, people like De Rossi and Totti, immediately. And then Roma seemed to have been lucky this year in their transfer activity, because they bought arguably two of the best buys of the season in the Ivory Coast striker Gervinho and the Dutch midfielder Stutman. And they've been really important figures in the Roma side. And then they also bought people like the Serb Adam Ljajic, who's been very useful. On top of that, then you add in the psychological factor, which is that they got off to a good start. They got in a run. The first big game was a derby against Lazio. They were a bit lucky to win that. Next big game was a game against Napoli. Again, they were a bit lucky to win that. They weren't lucky to deserve to beat Inter, but they've still got to play Juventus, and they've got to play Milan. And the Juventus Milan games come towards the end of the season, in the second half of the season. Well, we're not even at the halfway point yet. But what I'm saying is that their performances may have led people to start thinking a bit unrealistically, because I don't think they've got the overall squad strength. I think the recent events make that point. I don't think they've got the overall squad strength to ride out periods when you have people like Gervinho and Totti injured.
I wonder, too, if they benefited from not having to compete in Europe at the same time.
Yeah, no question. I mean, you're absolutely right. I should have said that immediately. I always think that makes one hell of a difference for any side. The only side that can actually handle that rhythm at the moment in Italian football is Juventus. They've got a very strong squad. But, I mean, yeah, if Roma had qualified for the Champions League, I would be quite happy to bet you a very good bottle of red wine that they wouldn't be anywhere near as high up on the table at the moment.
I guess, as you said, it's just a matter of, I mean, no doubt they're a quality side. They just don't have the strength of depth of the other long bench to compete.
We've got to say, John, the one thing you've got to say is, their back on form was a very good game. I don't know if you saw it, the Roma Fiorentina on Sunday.
I did, yeah.
And, Fiorentina are a terrific side too, play good football, coached by Vincenzo Montella, who knows all about Roma, as a former Roma player himself. And, I thought, in the circumstances, Roma did, that was a game where you sort of kept expecting Fiorentina to get a late equaliser, and Roma held on for what was a very important win, I think, for them.
Right. We spoke of Andrea Pirlo before. He's in the final year of his contract, and at 34, he's certainly getting on in years. Do you expect him to re-sign with Juventus? Might he go to another Serie A club, or might he go outside of Italy?
On paper, in theory, all three possibilities are valid. I would say my own suspicion is that he'll stay at Juventus. Juventus would never let him go to wouldn't make the mistake that AC Milan have done and let him go to another Serie A club, even at the age of 34, 35. He says he's had plenty of offers from outside of Italy. And whilst I'm sure that's true, I'm not sure he would... He's the sort of player, I don't see him as the sort of player who's ever really wanted to go to playing Spanish football in the Premiership. I don't think that's what he wants to do, and I don't think it's what he will do. Nor do I think that at his at this stage of his career, it would be a very good thing, you know, because he wouldn't be, if he went to the Premiership, for example, he wouldn't be, I can't imagine that he'd be being bought by, you know, a big club. He wouldn't be being bought by Chelsea, Arsenal, Liverpool, Manchester United. It wouldn't be clubs like that. So he'd end up playing for a mid-division Premiership side in which, you know, he'd have to relatively struggle quite a bit in surrounded by not quite the quality of players he's been playing with for his career so far. So my answer to you is I think that he'll come to some sort of arrangement in the end with Juventus, but it's going to be complicated because allegedly he's looking for more than, you know, originally Juventus said, well, we'll renew it on an annual basis from here on. And he apparently is looking for a three-year contract, which is a bit optimistic if you think about it, because that means he'd be, you know, he'd be 37 going on 38 at the end of the 3 years.
Well, and to say that, and to say nothing of the fact that, you know, Juventus has guys like Vidal and Pogba, who you mentioned earlier, and Marchisio,
yeah.
they've got a great deal of midfield depth that, you know, as you said, a 3 year deal might be a bit optimistic for him.
Very, very, very.
There were a lot of high-profile departures from Serie A during the summer transfer window, most notably Edinson Cavani, who went to PSG. But there were also a lot of newcomers, and as you mentioned too, in Gervinho and Strootman. Aside from those two, who else has stood out the most to you in your mind? Who has kind of really come into Serie A and just done really well and adapted immediately?
Well, the club that seems to me has done best in that regard is clearly Napoli. I mean, I've talked about Napoli there and saying that I think their defence leaves a bit to be desired on occasions, but they've bought terrific firepower up front in the Argentine, Higuain, the Spaniard, Caleon, and even the young, to us relatively unknown, Belgian Martins. They've all looked very, very useful. And on top of that, you know, their defence, what they have in defence, absolutely relies on the former Liverpool keeper, Reina, and the Albiol, Spaniard Albiol, former Real Madrid player. So every one of those five for the Napoli picked have been excellent players and look to me like very, very good boys. Other players, I haven't seen so many of the other newcomers to striving. One guy I did know, so the Ivory Coast player Kuna of Parma and the Brazilian Dos Santos Udinese. I saw them both play last weekend. Both played very, very well. Both good players.
What's been your? Have you seen much of Llorente? What have you made of him since his time in Juventus?
Oh, sorry, that's Lord. You're absolutely right. He's. I was going to forget somebody. Llorente's been a revelation. I find him a revelation because I remember last year at the European Championships in Poland and Ukraine, talking to some of my Spanish colleagues, and talking about who was going to play in the final against Italy. And they all said, well, one player who won't be playing is Llorente. And I said, why not? And they said, well, because, you know, the coach just doesn't rate him. He doesn't think he's good enough at this absolutely highest of high levels. And so I had the version of myself that when he came to Juventus that he might nest with the best buy possible, but he's turned out to be very, very useful. He's fitted in very well to their game. To have a sort of big man up front, a guy who can also, you know, it can be dangerous in the air, has turned out to be really useful for them. But he's more than that. He's a good footballer. And I think they're very, 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 very pleased with them at Juventus, and they're delighted with their purchase.
Paddy, thanks so much for joining us on Soccer Central Podcast. We really appreciate it. Best of luck in the future.
Thank you. Thank you, John.
Just a reminder that you can watch all 8 of Tuesday's UEFA Champions League games live on Sportsnet platforms starting at 2:30 p.m. Eastern. Manchester United versus Shakhtar Donetsk is on all 4 main Sportsnet channels. Galatasaray versus Juventus is on Sportsnet 1. And Bayern Munich versus Manchester City is on Sportsnet World. The remaining 5 games you can watch exclusively on live and Sportsnet World Online. Sportsnet is also going to be airing Wednesday's Champions League games and a full complement of Europa League matches on Thursday. Go to sportsnet.ca and check out the full broadcast schedule. Okay, folks, that's another edition of the Soccer Central podcast in the books. Check back on Thursday night as James Sharman and I host the Soccer Central radio show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. If you can't listen live, don't worry. You can download the show off iTunes and off our podcast page. Until then, cheers for listening.